Chapter 23 Sheeran led the way to the next room. There were soft curtains in there, and thick red curtains on the windows, and a maroon carpet on the floor. With the strange brick-toned light of Dubham pouring in, the general effect was one of dried blood everywhere. He had been surprised to see Theremin at the observatory this evening, after the horrendous columns he had written, after all he had done to pour cold water on Athor's campaign for national preparedness. In recent weeks, Athor had gone almost berserk with rage every time Theremin's name was mentioned. Yet somehow he had relented and permitted him to be here for the eclipse. That was odd and a little troublesome. It might mean that the stern fabric of the old astronomer's personality had begun to break down. That not only his anger, but also his whole inner structure of character was giving way in the face of the oncoming catastrophe. For that matter, Sheeran was more than slightly surprised to find himself at the observatory, too. It had been a last-minute decision, a pure impulse of the kind he remembers that his few minutes in the Tunnel of Mystery had evoked in him. But he had realized, in the end, that he had to be here, just as he had had to take that ride in the tunnel. To everyone else, he might be nothing more than an easygoing, overweight academic hack, but to himself, he was still a scientist beneath all the blubber. The study of darkness had concerned him through all his professional career. How, then, could he ever live with himself afterward, knowing that during the most celebrated episode of darkness in more than 2,000 years, he had chosen to hide himself away in the cozy safety of an underground chamber? No, he had to be here, witnessing the eclipse, feeling the darkness take possession of the world. Theremin said with unexpected frankness as they entered the adjoining room, "I'm starting to wonder whether I was right to have been such a skeptic, Sheeran." "You ought to wonder about it." "Well, I am. Seeing just Dubham up there like that. That weird red color spreading over everything. You know, I'd give 10 credits for a decent dose of white light right now. A good stiff Tano special. For that matter, I'd like to see Tano and Citha in the sky, too. Or even better, Onos." "Onos will be there in the morning," put in Binet, who had just entered the room. "Yes, but will we?" asked Sheeran, and grinned immediately to take the sting from his words. To Binet, he said, "Our journalistic friend is eager for a little nip of alcohol." "Athor will have a fit. He's given orders for everybody to be sober here this evening." Sheeran said, "So there's nothing but water to be had?" "Well..." "Come on, Binet. Athor won't come in here." "I suppose." Tiptoeing to the nearest window, Binet squatted, and from the low window box beneath it withdrew a bottle of red liquid that gurgled suggestively when he shook it. "I thought Athor didn't know about this," he remarked as he trotted back to the table. "Here, we've only got one glass, so as the guest, you can have it, Theremin. Sheeran and I can drink from the bottle." And he filled the tiny cup with judicious care. Laughing, Theremin said, "You never touched alcohol at all when we first met, Binet." "That was then. This is now. Tense times, Theremin. I'm learning. A good drink can be very relaxing at times like these." "So I've heard," Theremin said lightly. He took a sip. It was some sort of red wine, rough and raw, probably cheap jug wine from one of the southern provinces. Just the sort of thing that a lifelong abstainer like Binet would tend to buy, not knowing any better. But it was better than nothing. Binet helped himself to a hearty gulp and passed the bottle to Sheeran. The psychologist upended it and held it to his lips for a long, slow drink. Then, putting it down with a satisfied grunt and a smack of his lips, he said to Binet, "Athor seems strange this evening. I mean, even allowing for the special circumstances. What's wrong?" "Worrying about Pharaoh and Yimo, I suppose."
"Who?"
"A couple of young graduate students. They were due several hours ago and haven't shown up yet. Athor's terrifically short-handed, of course, because all but the really essential people have gone to the sanctuary." Theremin said, "You don't think they deserted, do you?"
"Who? Pharaoh and Yimo? Of course not. They're not the type. They'd give everything to be here this evening, taking measurements when the eclipse happens. But what if there's some kind of riot going on in Saro City and they've been caught in it?"
Binet shrugged.
"Well, they'll show up sooner or later, I imagine. But if they're not here as we approach the critical phase, things could get a little sticky when the work piles up. That must be what Athor's worrying about."
Sheeran said, "I'm not so sure. Two missing men would be on his mind, yes. But there's something else. He looks so old suddenly, weary, defeated even. The last time I saw him, he was full of fight, full of talk about the reconstruction of society after the eclipse. The real Athor, the Iron Man. Now all I see is a sad, tired, pathetic old wreck who's simply waiting for the end to come. The fact that he didn't even bother to throw Theramin out. He tried, Theramin said. Bine talked him out of it. And Sephira. There you are. Bine, did you ever know anyone who was able to talk Athor out of anything? Here, pass me the wine. It may be my fault, Theramin said. Everything that I wrote, attacking his plan to set up sanctuary-type shelters all across the country. If he genuinely believes that there's going to be a worldwide darkness in a few hours, and that all mankind will go violently insane. Which he does, said Bine, as do all of us. Then the failure of the government to take Athor's prediction seriously must be an overwhelming, crushing defeat for him. And I'm responsible as much as anyone. If it turns out that you people were right, I'll never forgive myself. Sheeran said, Don't flatter yourself, Theramin. Even if you had written 5 columns a day calling for a colossal preparedness movement, the government still wouldn't have done anything. It might have taken Athor's warnings even less seriously than it did, if that's possible, with a popular crusading journalist like you on Athor's side. Thanks, Theramin said. I really appreciate that. Is there any wine left? He looked toward Bine. And, of course, I'm in trouble with Sephira, too. She thinks I'm too contemptible for words. There was a time when she seemed really interested in you, Bine said. I was wondering about it for a while, as a matter of fact, whether you and she were, No, Theramin said, grinning. Not quite. And we never will now. But we were very good friends for a while. A fascinating, fascinating woman. What about this cyclic theory of prehistory of hers? Is there anything to it? Not if you listen to some of the other people in her department, Sheeran said. They're really scornful of it. Of course, they've all got a vested interest in the established archaeological framework, which says that Beklemont was the first urban center, and that if you go back more than a couple of thousand years, you can't find any civilization at all. Just primitive, shaggy, jungle-dwelling folk. But how can they argue away these recurrent catastrophes at the Hill of Thombo? Theramin asked. Scientists who think they know the real story can argue away anything that threatens their beliefs, Sheeran said. You scratch an entrenched academic, and you'll find he's pretty similar in some ways to an apostle of flame underneath. It's just a different kind of robe they wear. He took the bottle, which Theramin had been idly holding, and helped himself again. The deuce with them. Even a layman like me can see that Sephira's discoveries at Thombo turn our picture of prehistory inside out. The question isn't whether there were recurrent fires over a period of all those thousands of years. It's why. Theramin said, I've seen plenty of explanations lately, all of them more or less fantastic. Someone from Kitro University was arguing that there are periodic rains of fire every few thousand years. And we got a letter at the newspaper from someone who claims to be a freelance astronomer and says he's proved that Calgash passes through one of the suns every so often. I think there were even wilder things proposed. There's only one idea that makes any sense, Bine said quietly. Remember the concept of the Sword of Thargola. You have to dispense with the hypotheses that require extra bells and whistles in order to make sense. There's no reason why a rain of fire should fall on us every now and then, and it's obvious nonsense to talk about passing through suns. But the eclipse theory is accounted for perfectly by mathematical consideration of the orbit of Calgash as it's affected by universal gravitation. The eclipse theory may stand up, yes. No doubt it does. We'll find out pretty soon, eh? Theramin said. But apply Thargola's sword yourself to what you've just said. There's nothing in the eclipse theory that tells us that there'll necessarily be tremendous fires immediately afterward. No, Sheeran said. There's nothing about that in the theory, but common sense indicates it. The eclipse will bring darkness. Darkness will bring madness. And madness will bring the flames, which wrecks another couple of millenniums of painful struggle. It all comes to nothing tomorrow. Tomorrow there won't be a city standing unharmed in all Calgash. You sound just like the apostles, Theramin said angrily. I heard pretty much the same stuff from Fulhamin 66 months ago, and told you two about it, I recall, at the Six Suns Club. He gazed out the window, past the wooded slopes of Observatory Mount, to where the spires of Saro City gleamed bloodily on the horizon. The newsman felt the tension of uncertainty grow within him as he cast a quick glance at Dubham. It glowered redly at zenith, dwarfed and evil. Doggedly, Theramin went on. I can't buy your chain of reasoning. Why should I go nuts just because there isn't a sun in the sky? And even if I do. Yes, I haven't forgotten those poor bastards in the Tunnel of Mystery. Even if I do, and everyone else does, how does that harm the cities? Are we going to blow them down?
I said the same thing at first, Binet put in, before I stopped to think things through. If you were in darkness, what would you want more than anything else? What would it be that every instinct would call for?
Why, light, I suppose.
Yes, Sheeran cried, shouting now.
Light, yes. Light.
So?
And how would you get light?
Theremin pointed to the switch on the wall.
I'd turn it on.
Right, said Sheeran, mockingly. And the gods, in their infinite kindness, would provide enough current to give you what you wanted. Because the power company certainly wouldn't be able to. Not with all the generators grinding to a halt, and the people who operate them stumbling around babbling in the dark, and the same with the transmission line controllers. You follow me?
Theremin nodded numbly.
Sheeran said, Where will light come from when the generators stop?
The godlights, I suppose. They've all got batteries.
But you may not have a godlight handy.
You'll be out there on the street in the darkness, and your godlight will be sitting at home right next to your bed. And you want light.
So you burn something, eh, Mr. Theremin?
Ever see a forest fire? Ever go camping and cook a stew over a wood fire?
Heat isn't the only thing burning wood gives off, you know. It gives off light, and people are very well aware of that. And when it's dark, they want light, and they're going to get it.
So they'll burn logs, Theremin said, without much conviction.
They'll burn whatever they can get. They've got to have light. They've got to burn something, and wood won't be handy, not on city streets. So they'll burn whatever is nearest.
A pile of newspapers?
Why not?
The Cerro City Chronicle will give a little brightness for a while.
What about the newsstands that the papers on sale are stacked up in?
Burn them, too.
Burn clothing. Burn books. Burn roof shingles.
Burn anything.
The people will have their light, and every center of habitation goes up in flames. There are your fires, Mr. Newspaperman. There is the end of the world you used to live in.
If the eclipse comes, said Theremin, an undertone of stubbornness in his voice.
If, yes, said Sheeran. I'm no astronomer, and no apostle either. But my money's on the eclipse.
He looked straight at Theremin. Eyes held each other as though the whole matter were a personal affair of respective willpowers. And then Theremin broke away, wordlessly. His breathing was harsh and ragged. He put his hands to his forehead and pressed hard. Then came a sudden hubbub from the adjoining room.
Binet said, I think I heard Yimo's voice. He and Pharaoh must have showed up finally. Let's go in and see what kept them.
Might as well, muttered Theremin. He drew a long breath and seemed to shake himself. The tension was broken, for the moment.